Get access to actionable news and market research with all the information you need to invest smarter and profit faster. Start your free trial today at pro.benzinga.com.
Welcome to another episode of Benzinga Cannabis Insider. Today, I have a very special co-host, Mr. Spencer Israel.
Hey, hello. What's up, everybody?
Are you excited to talk cannabis today?
I'm always excited to talk cannabis. I'm also always excited to talk about ETFs. So you can imagine how excited I am when I get to talk cannabis ETFs. It's like a mind meld. It's an amalgam of my two favorite things. So,
I know you love ETFs, and so does all of our audience. Actually, you know, it's something. Why do you love ETFs so much?
You know what? I've asked myself that question a lot. I think I just love I love what they've done for the average investor. You know, they're not perfect, but they're pretty darn close. I love how they have driven down fees over the years. I love that they provide built-in diversification. I love their transparency, usually. I love their tax efficiency. I just think they're probably one of the greatest, well, not probably, they are one of the greatest things to ever happen to the average investor like me.
Oh, yeah.
I'm average, Javi. And I invest.
I really agree.
So I just love them, man. I think they're a great innovation.
I mean, people often ask me, hey, where do I start? You know, investing in cannabis stocks, please recommend some stocks. And I'm like, I mean, unless you're going to stay really on top of the news every day and react quickly and trade quickly, you'll be stuck, right? In a liquidity issue, you'll be stuck in downtrends. You'll be stuck in bear markets. So I tell them, just go to an ETF, pick your ETF. Pick the one you like and have someone who's a professional in this do it for you. So you'll be stuck in bear market.
That's exactly right. Sorry, that was my fault.
There you go. Exactly. So let's get into some news before we jump into our interview today.
Let's do the news and then we'll do the guest.
Yes, sir. Big news out of Uber. Uber Technologies, UBER, on the New York Stock Exchange. You know the brand. You know them well. They are finally getting into cannabis. A little bit into cannabis, right? So what they did was announce a partnership with Tokyo Smoke, where people in Ontario can order cannabis through the Uber Eats app. Right now, they are not delivering. It's a click and collect kind of situation. But it's the first real move that we've seen out of Uber, right? Who had been expressing interest for a while. What do you make of this?
Yeah, I'm into it, right? I've sort of been wondering when this is going to happen. I'm actually a little bit surprised it's taken so long. I kind of, you know, we saw this kind of thing happen last year where like there was all these regulations on cannabis and what was and was not allowed, and a lot of them were like relaxed for purposes of the pandemic. Right. For example, e-commerce and delivery and pickup and that sort of thing. Kind of surprised it took this long for Uber to get in, but I like it, man. I like it.
Very cool. What you got on your news? What is catching your eye?
What's catching my eye in terms of just cannabis news today? Well, if I go to our trusty document, I would see that the very next headline we have here is High Tide expanding their U.S. reach via $31.25 million acquisition of New Leaf Naturals. They bought an 80% stake in the company.
High Tide continuing to make moves, right? You know, left and right, just expanding their footprint. Very, very cool move. Again, we're talking about HITI on the NASDAQ.
All right, let's keep going here, and then we got to bring on our guest here in a few minutes.
One more. This was a Benzinga exclusive. We broke the news, as you know. This is out of Latin America. The country of Peru approved the first cannabis-based treatment for cancer-related pain. The drug in question is called Sativil. It's an analog, a copy of Sativex, which is produced by Jazz Pharmaceuticals, GW Pharmaceuticals. It's owned by Jazz. NASDAQ, Jazz, and this product, Sativil, is produced by Vertimed. It's pretty accessible, so Very, very, very exciting news for the people of Peru and potentially for the people of Brazil pretty soon. From what
I was going to say, because you're in South America, do we know what other countries this could come to next?
Oh yeah, probably Brazil, considering Verdemate is based in Brazil. But you know, it's a pharmaceutical type product, right? So it's a drug. A traditional drug like the ones you find in pharmacy, right? It's undergone all kinds of clinical trials, phase one, phase two, phase three. It's been tested in humans, right? So for agencies, for government agencies across Latin America, it's easier to approve this, right? They can go to a published study, to a respected publication, and go like, okay, this is efficacious and this is safe. So, you know, it's easier to roll out.
Efficacious, Javi. it's an SAT word right there. ACT word. That was good, man.
I've been studying English, and our guest today, this is a great segue, has been studying Spanish during her last appearance at Benzinga Cannabis Hour or Benzinga Cannabis Insider. I can't really remember which one of the shows it was. You know, she talks about Mexico, about why she is so excited about Mexico. And today she will be talking about her new cannabis ETF. Our guest today is Emily Paxia of Poseidon Asset Management. Emily, welcome to Benzinga Cannabis Hour. Or Insider. I mess it up all the time.
How are you? Thank you for having me, both of you.
Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, a pleasure to chat with you. I have not met you before, but I hope to see you at our next Benzinga Cannabis Capital Conference next year. Javi asked me on today because he knows I'm a nerd about ETFs. But before we get to that, I have a quick question. I was looking at your background and I saw you studied psychology. And I'm just really curious how that sort of impacted the way you look at investing, because we know it's all psychological, right? So I'm just curious how your education sort of informed your investing. It's like your investing style.
Right. So, I mean, I think a big thing is that the markets alone are almost a psychological unit in and of itself. And you can see how it played out with like the meme stocks earlier this year, or how it's carrying out in terms of which names really do well. Or, you know, we track a lot of the trends because so much of our particular sector is very retail focused. And so if you're tracking what goes on Reddit or on Twitter, you can kind of understand the sentiment of the investment space at the time. And so when we're dealing with individuals, there's definitely psychology and there's almost like a collective consciousness around this. So that's a very important thing in terms of understanding market sentiment and market sentiment around different names even. The other thing is really when you're in the private side in terms of, or even on the public side, when you're working with founders, just understanding that, I mean, everything about business is people. People are business. And so understanding how people function and how they're working together and frankly, how they're doing is important. So both of those things are incredibly important. And then one other thing I would say is the trajectory I was on before this was on consulting about building brands or products or services, which is all about psychology. And so what are we doing here? We're building brands, products, and services around cannabis. And so it's about understanding and consumer psychology and how people are navigating different, you know, areas of their lives. And most specifically, what it's looking like kind of coming in out of a pandemic, going kind of back into a pandemic, and how people are navigating their consumer behaviors around all of these things. So it's quite intertwined.
Awesome.
Yeah, no, super interesting that you bring that up too, right? Because when I first started writing about finance before cannabis, I remember some services were popping up, right? And they analyzed the market sentiment based on tweets and stuff like that, right? And at first it was reporting on it, and I was thinking like, what? Why does it even matter what people are saying on Twitter? Like, stocks don't move that way. I was a fundamental analyst. I was looking at PE ratios and stuff like that, and I'm like, this makes no sense. It makes total sense. You know, half of the market is basically determined by sentiment, right? And especially in cannabis. Do you think this is accentuated in cannabis? Is it an industry still driven by investors' passion or not so much anymore?
I think it very much matters in our industry because we don't have institutional capital flowing the same way it does in other sectors. And so the fluctuations around sentiment, I think, are, we have a finer response to it in our markets. There's also lower liquidity in our markets. And so individual traders can, you know, have impacts on how the market's moving in terms of what happens, especially if they're trading at size. I was just talking to someone who was telling me about how their life partner, you know, took a lot of money out of the market because they were doing tax loss selling and then reallocating. And anyway, he was like, oh, did you see when that name moved, you know, the one day? He was like, that was my person pulling money from the market. And I'm like, I mean, in most markets, you can't know that, but in this market, you kind of can know. And, you know, Morgan and I have been tracking it since we launched in 2014. We would see when different analysts would weigh in on things. For example, like Alan Brockstein would make a comment back in the day, like in 2014, and we just watch the stocks respond. And so it's just, you know, with what is it called? Like with great, something comes great responsibility with great, I can't remember.
Great power. Yeah.
Great power. Yeah. It comes great responsibility. So.
Yeah, very often Alan was making those.
Harnessing the power of the green wave. That's what they say.
That's right. That's it. So real fast, before we get to the ETF, just tell us a little bit about Poseidon and just sort of your backstory as an investor in the space, because you've been in the space for some time.
Yep. Yeah, I'm an old lady in the investment landscape of cannabis, but.
Not what I meant, but hey, okay.
No, it's true, though. I mean, that not that many have been around as long as Poseidon has. Poseidon was formed by my brother and I in 2013. We started investing actively in January of 2014, right when Colorado opened their adult use doors. Our first position in our first fund was GW Pharmaceutical. I heard you all talking about GW now and Jazz Pharmaceutical. It's come a long way and it's a pretty amazing pathway. And then, you know, the team has just grown since then. We've now got three private funds under our masthead. We've got seven direct syndicate vehicles that we run as well. And now we have the ETF. And now our team is, you know, we've got Mike, who joined us in September 2018 to help us with Fund 2. And then we've got Andres, who joined us, who is, by the way, also dual citizen Colombian US and has family in Mexico City. So again, my Latin America, he does a little Spanish training with me. And then we've got Patrick and Celia, who joined us as well, coming over from Canopy Boulder, which was, it's been a great, we call it like the super group. They came from, Patrick, you know, had been the founder of Canopy Boulder. They launched in, I think, late 2014, 2015, longest running business accelerator in the cannabis industry. So, and then now we have Tyler Greif, who just joined us and who's based in New York, who's now co-managing the ETF. So Poseidon has certainly expanded its reach, and I'm really proud of our team.
Very cool. So tell us about the ETF.
Yeah. So
talk about.
Yeah. So I was excited to hear the excitement about ETFs before I got on today. I agree with you. I think ETFs are amazing investment vehicles and products because they are lower in fee structure. They're more tax efficient than many other vehicles. And they give you a good exposure to a sector if you're looking for it. And PSDN is the ticker, or New York Stock Exchange traded. It's exciting to see my friends send me screenshots of their Robinhood accounts buying PSDN. You know, as a manager that's been running private funds alongside my colleagues for the past several years, 7+8 years, we can only talk to certain cohorts of the investment landscape and private, you know, family offices, high net worth individuals. And we just love that this democratizes access to investing into cannabis through a vehicle that we are putting forward with all of that experience. You know, Morgan's been, our first fund did have exposure in the public side as well as private. And so we've done a lot of work on that side. We understand a lot about these markets more than many and how the different, you know, aspects of it affect it, like being OTC listed for many of these names, having, you know, the Canadian aspect to this as well. And so it's just really exciting. And so our portfolio is a little bit different than the others in that we do have leverage as a component of it. And so we're calling it selective or intelligent leverage that we're using.
I was going to ask you, what exactly is different about PSDN compared to any of the other broad-based cannabis ETFs or even the other advisor shares one MSOS? So can you explain how you deploy that leverage?
Yeah, so it's a little bit complicated because the way that we invest into the U.S. names involves total return swaps, because you kind of have to have that synthetic instrument in order to be a New York Stock Exchange traded ETF, but also have access to the U.S. names, which are, to us, we're very bullish on the U.S. operators, especially the MSOs. We think there's a lot of opportunity here. And so basically what happens when people invest into Poseidon, it gives us cash, which creates these creation units, and we can use those creation units for purchasing the total return swaps in broad terms. The way we're doing this is we've applied leverage of up to 1.5 times. And so what that means is that we will feel volatility in the market, but if we do have days where the names that the aspects of the portfolio that are driven by that leverage, we'll see even more outsized returns when the market starts to come back. So it does kind of give you more torque in the way that your dollars are spent, and it's pretty exciting for us. So, you know, one of the things is it's called the dynamically traded hedge fund or traded fund. And for us, we've always prided ourselves on being very nimble and dynamic in navigating the challenges of cannabis investing. And so we really wanted to have an instrument that reflected that. And I think, you know, what's great is that we do have these different products in cannabis. Someone asked me, you know, why launch, quote unquote, another ETF? Well, I think we can all agree that the cannabis industry, especially in the U.S., is capital deprived. And this is really one way to draw institutional volumes of capital into these names. And so having MSOS out there, having CNBS, having these other names is really interesting. And you've seen one of the other ones, I do believe, has, I know they have leverage, but it's applied across the entire portfolio. Ours is really applied to the names that we, you know, the top the areas that we are leaning in on, where we see the most potential.
I have more questions about that, but there's a question from Zach in the chat. He wants to know if you've already deployed that leverage.
Yes.
Zach, there you go.
I mean, it's early days. This is all we launched. We opened for, I mean, yes. we opened for trading as of last Wednesday. And so, you know, there's a lag time to when the capital comes in and the market makers release it for our creation units. So we're just like, we're getting caught up. We're getting the momentum going of this, this product. It just is going to take a few, you know, I think MSOS is very large now, you know, and they've got a lot of capital inflows, which is very exciting. We're very early days in PSDN. So we're building. Very excited.
Definitely exciting. Now, one thing you mentioned that you know, I'm really interested in is you say, you know, ETF sort of bring a more institutional flow of capital, or at least bigger flows of capital, right? How do you feel about ETFs almost being market makers in the cannabis industry? Are the ETFs one of the biggest market makers in the cannabis industry right now? Should they be? Right. How does that work in terms of market dynamics versus like the general markets?
Yeah. Well, you hit it on the head. I mean, the ETFs can act as institutional capital in this particular industry. And what's neat is when you look at the portfolio construction of each of the ETFs and ours, once it's like fully baked and you can really see how our thesis is playing out, you can see us talking about it on the Advisor Shares website, by the way. It's great because you'll see we all have different ways that we're approaching the market and different names that tend to be more overweight for some of us versus underweight for others. So you'll see that the ETFs actually do provide some nice exposure in different ways across the industry. And it does allow, because we're New York Stock Exchange traded, not only does it provide broader access for retail investors, but it provides access for institutions. So in a way, the institutions putting capital to work through the ETFs, the institutions are investing into these names. And so it creates kind of a great institutional funnel for the whole industry. And as more names come public, you know, we have a couple of technology names that are public, like Weedmaps and some of the grow tech companies. Mm-hmm. But Poseidon has a long track record of investing into private technology. And so in the coming years, we're going to see more technology entering the public markets around cannabis. And so you're just going to see more in these baskets. And I'm pretty excited about the products and how they'll evolve. But yes, I do think this is a way for institutional capital to play in the U.S. markets. And kind of going back to our quote, with great power comes great responsibility. And obviously we interface with Dan Ahrens at MSOS and Noah at MSOS and McKenzie, and they're very aware of their position in the market and how they think about how they allocate capital, because it is important to the industry, as being good shepherds of capital always is how you direct capital.
And as a quick follow-up, right, regarding the impact of, you know, of maybe sometimes smaller players on the market, one thing you mentioned earlier as well was the impact of individual traders sometimes can be seen. How do you manage this volatility within your ETF, right? How do you respond to this? How do you manage the risk, you know, that is inherent to a market that can respond to small trades?
It's an ongoing monitoring. I mean, 2 weeks ago on Friday, I was on my podcast with Cy Scott and with Andrew Carter from Stiefel, as the news that a Republican bill was going to be put forth and you know, marijuana moment broke that news. And we just watched the market, which had been really just bumping along the bottom, all of a sudden just got on a rocket ship. And then it was on a rocket ship for like the next 5 days. And then, you know, Mace made the announcement, and then it was a sell the news moment. And we watched these things. And so when you've been at something,
Emily, aren't they all sell the news moments? I'm in it with you.
Yeah. It's talk about psychology, right? We're coming back to the psychology. We're talking about, this is all what it's about. And especially after watching this for 8 years, you know, Morgan talks about the animal spirits of the market. I mean, he's definitely tracking those. And that's part of what's being dynamic, is really watching. We know we're in a catalyst driven market. I was actually a little bit surprised. I've been watching to see how the private sector will be another catalyst driver, just like when we saw Constellation be a massive catalyst for the market when they put the money into Canopy Growth Corp a few years ago. But, you know, Uber making this kind of tiptoe into the market didn't really give it the impact that maybe it could have. But maybe if we start seeing more direction of capital from corporations and making bets on this sector as a true consumer and wellness sector, I think we'll start to see that as another catalyst aside from just the regulatory catalysts that we've seen.
Yeah, and on the discussion of being stewards of capital and these ETFs potentially, you know, serving as, you know, massive market makers, a lot's been made of the inflows into MSOS. And I'm not going to ask you specifically about that, because that's not your ETF, and even if it was. But I'll put it to you this way. If something like what happened to MSOS, if that were to happen to you, if that were to happen to your ETF, how would you handle that?
You mean if we got a lot of capital?
Yes, that's what I mean. If you got a massive amount of influence.
Yes. Well, I hope we will, because we have great aspirations to drive direct it well into the industry. I mean, if you look at the multiples where these names are trading, and you look at their growth rate, they're all well undercapitalized, and there's so much they could do. They're all, first of all, borrowing hundreds of millions of dollars, because that's the access to capital that they have. The equity markets now have to catch up. So even if we were also to become, you know, a $2 billion, NAV ETF, there's so much space to deploy this. Now, I don't think it'll happen overnight, but we have aspirations to become a sizable ETF, so we can deploy capital the way that we think our strategy will benefit the industry.
It's good that you say this, though. I remember visiting you in your office in San Francisco years ago and asking you, like, okay, why don't you make this fund bigger, like your first fund? And you said, like, we don't have where to deploy it. Like, we literally, you know, don't know where to put the money. We have more money than what we want to invest, or the companies that, you know, we feel are investable. How things have changed, though, right? Yeah.
It's a massive market. I mean, we just, in our materials, you'll see, like, we were looking at the economic impact studies around cannabis. $91 billion is the economic impact of cannabis on the United States at this time. That is not something to ignore. And so when you think about all of the tentacles and, like, the ways that this reaches into society and has a broader impact, it's really exciting. And yeah, the TAM is there. I mean, it's time. It's time for us to go.
So let me ask you this. Poseidon or PSDN actively manage ETF.
Yes.
What are the rules? Are there any rules here for you? Are there any rules the fund follows?
Yes, we do. I mean, we have weightings. We have cash percentage holdings. So we've got, I mean, we're an SEC registered firm. We've got full compliance. We're working with everybody on it. So we've got
I meant rules in terms of the allocation and the holdings.
Yeah.
And thing. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we're US focused.
Okay.
We're US MSO focused, but we also have a focus on the ancillaries. I'm a little rusty on what I'm allowed to say from a percentages point, but we do have our allocations marked and our cash percentage holdings, but I can't remember what I'm allowed to say because this is a little new to me.
What is the rebalancing look like? You're just actively always adding and buying and selling, or is there there's no monthly or quarterly?
It's active. I mean, right now it's daily because the NAV is like doubling and tripling every day. Yeah.
Got it. Okay.
So it's a little like where we'll get to is, it'll probably be more like, it's such an early and dynamic market that I think it'll be every day. We're going to be reevaluating everything. Yeah.
Cool. And right now I think you're at 32 holdings.
Around there. Yeah.
Okay. Somewhere in that neck of the woods.
Yeah.
Which is par for the course for cannabis ETFs anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
I was actually looking at your holdings, right? And I was going to ask you, like, why is less than 10% of the fund allocated to Canadian companies? I guess you kind of answered that. But just one for the chat, one for the fans here. I see you hold about 2%, 2.5% of the fund is allocated to Sundial. What is your thesis there?
Oh, I mean, Sundial is interesting because they went through kind of a crash and burn story. And I mean, the Canadian names I'd characterize as like we have some names in there that we consider are driving beta in the market. And then we have our alpha drivers, and so that's how we think about the different names too. But Sundial, I met with Zach, the newer CEO. He had been on the board. They'd obviously gone through some turmoil and he stepped in, and Sundial got lumped in as a stock into that whole GameStop AMC thing. And they were in rough shape. And then all of a sudden they were like kind of like shot out of a cannon. And I met with Zach this summer. We've had a few conversations. He's super savvy about what he wants to do with those resources. They've been doing some lending. As you've probably seen, they've almost got like the separate lending facility within the Sundial name. And I can't remember what it's called right now, but I think he's a savvy guy. And I think he said to me, he's like, look, the window opened and we jumped through it. And I think that's what you need to be doing in this space. I mean, they have some great assets up there. They also acquired a pretty sizable footprint from a retail standpoint. So they've got the resources to make it a turnaround. So that's kind of, when you're looking at companies, a lot of times you look at the teams, and I just think Zach has got an interesting lens on it.
Oh, yeah.
Question from our last one here. This is from the chat. P. Ross, will the ETF invest in hempcrete?
Oh, interesting question. I love hempcrete. And Poseidon, as a firm, has investments on the private side in hemp processing technologies that will be used for hempcrete, but is focused really on fiber for textiles because there's a lot of demand for it. And frankly, the supply chain for fashion is broken and really bad for the environment. So there's a lot of really interesting, cool, they're calling it like a seed to sown movement. If there was a hempcrete technology company that fit our we're a very fundamentals focused firm for sure. And so if one of those companies were to match our fundamentals, it would absolutely fit within our focus because we do believe in industrial hemp. And it's a good question. It doesn't get as much airtime as other things, but we're very enthusiastic about the potential of it and in housing as well. I mean, the Bringing It Home documentary, that those who have not seen it, it's really remarkable to see what it means to kind of live within hemp as a breathable kind of living almost medium for home building.
I think you were the first one to bring up actually mooncloth, right? One time, like, okay. So I was telling you something like, okay, hemp cloth clearly looks like a bag of potatoes or something like, hippies would wear back in the day. And you'd be like, check this out. It's like silk. And again, years after, Jane Fonda told me, I love hemp cloth as well. It is nothing like what you'd imagine. And I'm here thinking if it's good enough for Jane, it's good enough for me.
I mean, I was raised on Jane Fonda's workouts, so it's still fitness and love for life. Yeah.
Weren't we all, Emily?
She I still want to get her a pair of the denim that we've got. So at some point.
What is that about? Before we let you go, what are the jeans? You just like drop this, like, oh, sustainable jeans and walk away.
Yeah. No, I mean, that company I was mentioning, Bastcore, they're doing a partnership with a long-running denim provider that also has relationships with, if you think about it, probably one of the better known denim companies in the US. And so, I've seen the jeans, I've seen the denim. It's pretty exciting. So I'm getting a pair myself, but getting Jane Fonda a pair would be full circle. My mother would just love it. I mean, she used to do the Jane Fonda workout videos in the morning, and I would be right next to her kind of bouncing around trying to do my best. But
we'll do our best to get a pair to her, I'm sure. Yeah.
She'd look great in them. So, yeah. Sorry, what was that?
No, thank you so much for joining us today. I very much look forward to following the fund and you know, as it matures a little bit and has more than like 2 days of trading history. Wishing you the best of luck and seriously, keep doing what you're doing, because you're doing the Lord's work. And thanks for coming on the show today.
Thank you very much. Thanks for hosting me. I hope to meet you in person at the next conference.
I hope so. Javi, make sure I get invited, all right?
Oh, I will. I will. Right. Emily Paxia,
thanks a lot.
Co-founder, managing partner at Poseidon Asset Management. Go check them out. PSDN is their ticker as well. New ETF in cannabis, the hottest ETF in cannabis right now, dare we say. Woof.
PSDN.
If you think that is the case.
Not investment advice, but at the very least, if you're into this stuff, as I am, look into it, for real. Each one of these cannabis ETFs, they're all a little bit different, right? And that's the thing about ETFs, is there's room for creativity, right? Select leverage. No one's doing that right now, besides Emily.
And returns vary widely. You'd think they don't, right? When there's relatively few companies in the industry, second guess.
That's true. Okay. Javi, do we have anything else or is it a wrap?
I think it's a wrap. Go follow us on social media, BZCannabis, BenzingaCannabis.com, to get your news every day. Subscribe to our newsletter and go listen to Spencer's show tomorrow morning, pre-market prep. What time is it?
Every morning, 8 a.m. Eastern time. You all know that drill by now. Javi, thank you so much for having me on the show today. Everyone, hit the like button. Please, the show is free, but the likes are your payment. And if you don't do it, we will come and hunt you down and find you and make you hit the like button.
Fantastic.
All right, we're going to
Thursday, 4 p.m., Benzinga Cannabis Hour.
See you Thursday, Javi.
Did you know nearly all stock price changes of 10% or more result from a single news headline? That's right. News headlines have a unique ability to drive stock prices up or down. These news catalysts create trading opportunities every day. All you need is a little help to reach out and take them. And if you're looking to grow your portfolio, it doesn't matter if your investment budget is small or big. An easy-to-read stream of news headlines will increase your opportunities to profit from price changes in the stock market, consolidate a knowledge-based investment strategy, and grow your portfolio. All you need is Benzinga Pro and its powerful news alerts, price tracking, and portfolio monitoring to make a positive change in your trading performance. We've already helped thousands of retail traders across the world, and they could not be happier. Increase your market knowledge, boost your exposure to big movers, and make informed trades before major price changes. The opportunities are all around you. Subscribe now, and we'll skyrocket your portfolio today.